Blog Talk Radio.
Tell me a secret. I don't just want to know about any secret of yours. I want to know about my special secret.
Welcome to One Love, One Connection, One Us, with your host, Reverend Arlene Cahet.
And Reverend Harvey L. Bailey.
Yes, it is good to be here. Good to be here. Arlene, how are you today?
I'm feeling excellent. How are you? Oh, thank you for the applause. Thank you. I'm bowing.
I am feeling excellent, too. Well, you know, our fans, they just love us. And so just hearing us. You know, they're just cheering us on. Arlene, tonight we are going to find out why we hurt the ones we love. Arlene, can I ask you a question? Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been in love? Now, I ain't talking about your run-of-the-mill, everyday love. Ooh, I love you. You know, the Pepe Le Pew love. No. I'm talking about some serious love. I'm talking about crackhead love. I'm talking about addicted to love over the top. The kind of love that makes you steal from your mama's purse. The kind of love that makes you hit your papa in the back of the head. The kind of love that when you're with this person, if they say, I dare you to walk up to the pulpit, take the mic from the preacher, and say, I love this person, that you would gladly go down the aisle, push the preacher out of the way, take the mic from his hand, and say, I am in love with so-and-so. I'm talking about just blindly crazy, mad, funky love.
Okay. Well, yes, I have, and I did not call it love after it was all said and done.
What did you call it?
I called it, you know, my descent into a bit of insanity. But
well, you know, there's a thin love between love and insanity.
They say love
and hate, but that's the same thing. It's like a quarter. You got heads and tails. In order to hate somebody, you got to love them because you're preoccupied with them just like you are when you love somebody. But insanity, you know, love, clinically speaking, people who are in love have the same chemical and mental reactions as someone who's insane. How about that? How about that?
Oh, goodness. God help us all. Okay.
Hey, now we know why it takes a fool to learn that love don't love nobody. We're all insane when we're in love. But, Arlene, I want to share a story with you. I want to tell you this story. I want us to think about this story as we go on throughout the show today. All right?
All righty.
So a young man, he was 23 at the time. You know, he's hanging out on the town one night, and he sees this woman. Wow, she's fine, he thinks to himself. You know, he's very attracted to her. So he goes over and he starts talking to her, and he asks her if he can buy her some drinks. And so she likes him. You know, she's feeling the vibe that he's putting down. And so she has some drinks with him. And, you know, one thing turned into another. They spend the whole night together just laughing and joking and talking. And before they know it, they're in a relationship. Like neither of them seen in common. It's like that one night just turned into months. But now they're in a relationship. And shortly after being in a relationship, she finds out she's pregnant. So she says to the guy, you know, I'm pregnant. We're going to have a child. And he starts to back away. You know, he starts to pull away. He was all in. He was calling her and, you know, he was doing all the wooing, you know, just telling her how beautiful she was, always wanted to spend time with her, just couldn't get enough of her. And obviously, you know, sex was on the menu, so they was eating like crazy. Obviously, that's how she got pregnant. But now, you know, he doesn't have time for her like he used to. Oh, he calls, but It's a short call, and he's not really engaged in it. It's almost obligatory call. And when she wants to spend time with him, he puts her off until he feels like he absolutely needs to be with her. And when he's with her, you know, the holding hands just isn't the way it used to. Now he don't really hold a hand, though he'll walk close to her. He'll even put his arm around her from time to time. But things just seem to change, and obviously she noticed that. Now, you know how it can be when you're pregnant. Obviously, you've been that way a few times, right?
Yes, a couple.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, women can get a little hormonal. And so, obviously, also having the, you know, women are better at that sixth sense thing than men are. So y'all pick up on some things. So picking up on the fact that he's just not as present as he was when, you know, when they first got together just a few months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Arguments start to ensue, and it gets to the point where by the middle of the second trimester of her pregnancy, all they do is argue. It's like they can't even be in the same room without arguing. There's just no peace with this couple. And by the end of the third month of that second trimester, they're physically violent with each other. They've gotten to the point where arguments have turned physical. They are hitting each other, and she's pregnant. This is not good for anybody involved. But Arlene, that's not the end of the story, and it actually gets better. Because after the baby's born, you know, they seem to find a place where they're no longer arguing and fighting, and they're certainly not being violent towards each other. Instead, the man seems to be all in now. He is all about this little girl that he's now the father of. The mother, on the other hand, seems to be the one who's checked out. And so the father finds himself spending all of his time at home, since they've now moved in together, with his daughter. He feeds her, he bathes her, he changes her, you know, he buys her clothes. It, for him, is all about her. She has become his world, the apple of his eye. He plays with her, he rocks her to sleep. Now, his girl, she's there, but she's just kind of set herself off. And I don't even know if he's noticed. He may have not even known if he noticed, because he's only focused on the baby. But after a couple years, well, actually, you know, about 50, 51 months, things seem to be getting much better. Now, you know, there's a little activity going on. One day she had said to him, you know, a few months earlier, we should get married, and he decided, yeah, let's do that. And so now they're actually married. They do actually talk to each other, and she's a little more active in her daughter's life than she was before. But on this particular night, he's about to realize something that went completely unnoticed. You see, for the past few months, his wife now had been hitting the gym, working off that pregnancy weight. And she's been putting on makeup and perfume, and she's bought some nice new clothes, and she looks really good, and she smells really good. And, you know, she's spending one or two nights a week at work where she's working late, and, you know, things just seem to be good. They're happy, and, you know, the extra money from her overtime is really helping out around the house, especially with the new baby. So he hasn't really focused on her transformation at all. But this particular night is the night of her company's Christmas party. And so as they get to the Christmas party, she asked him to get her some punch. And so he goes to the punch bowl, which is only like 4 feet behind where they were standing. He gets a cup for her and a cup for him. And as he's turning around walking back these few steps back to his wife, one of her coworkers come up to her, and he wraps his arms around her and give her a kiss on the mouth. Now, she pushes the guy away, but the husband's thinking, what the? You know what comes after that. And so he puts down one of the cups and doesn't hand the other one to his wife. He's just kind of holding it, I guess processing in his head what he's going to do. As the wife says, this is my husband, and introduce him. And the guy kind of steps back. Husband, yeah, right. I know you're married, right? Yes, hi, nice to meet you, man. You know, I've heard about you. I heard a lot about you. And the guy, the husband, trying to make up his mind what to do, he does extend his hand, and he gives the guy a handshake, but he gives him what I call the man shake. You know, that's when you put that squeeze in there. But this time, he puts a little extra squeeze in, and he holds the guy's hand a little longer than you normally would with a handshake. He continues to squeeze the guy's hand until he sees a grimace on his face. Finally, he lets the guy's hand go. And for the rest of the night, him and his wife do not say a word to each other. Even on the ride home, they don't speak to each other. When they get home, she takes care of the babysitter. He goes up to his child's bedroom, and he looks in on her. She's sleeping nicely, and then he heads down the hall to his bedroom. And it's not until he sits on the bed that he actually asks her, "What's going on? What's up with that guy?" And she was like, "Oh, no, that was nothing. You know, we're a friendly group at work. That's is a friend of mine. I told you about him." And he's like, "No, I don't remember ever hearing about him." And so he asked, "Are you cheating on me?" And so she responded, obviously, no, I'm not cheating on you. I wouldn't do that." And he say, "Don't lie to me. Tell me the truth. Are you cheating on me?" And so she looks at him and like, "You really want to know?" And so she starts talking about the depression she was in after the baby and how he didn't pay any attention to her. He was only focused on the baby. And it was only after they got married that she even felt like she was a part of his life anymore. But even then, she was second to their child. And so he interrupts her because none of this means anything to him. All he heard was, "She's cheating on him." And so he says, "You cheating bitch," and she smacks him. And so now they're just looking at each other, just cold looks at each other. And I guess she decided, before he hit me, I'm going to hit him again. And so she cold cocks him. She sucker punches him right in the mouth. Now he grabs her by her hair. He jumps off the bed, dragging her across the bed. He throws her up against the wall, smacks her a few times, then pushes her back towards the bed. Arlene, the guy, is enraged. He leaves the house, and as his wife is kneeling against the bed, crying profusely, she hears the front door slam, she hears the car starts, and she can hear the car engine as it drives away into the night. How do we get there, Arlene? How do we go from being madly in love to wanting to kill each other, to hurting each other? How does this happen?
Well, I would say that the very first thing that happened was the whole pulling away when he found out that she was pregnant. You know, and understand, I think that the majority of us can understand that he was probably getting himself in that mind space of wrapping his head around, "Oh my God, my life is going to change in a major and drastic way." However, you know, when a woman is pregnant and a person is pulling away from them, and considering how hormonal a woman can be, mm-hmm. that can hurt the person who, you know, the woman who's pregnant.
Yes,
you know,
and Arlene, I want to stop you right there because you're going a little past where I want to go right now.
Okay.
How do we get to hurting each other? What are ways that we hurt each other?
Well, yeah, some of the
And we can break this story down and look at some of the things, as you were doing, let's look at some of the things that happened here, how they hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you started off by saying he pulled away.
He pulled away.
That can hurt.
That can hurt.
Yeah.
And with the pulling away, not even having it followed up by communication about
right.
what his mindset was like.
Lack of communication. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after the baby is born, just the virtual ignoring her and having the focus be centrally focused on the baby.
And now let's go back to that, because after the baby was born, yes, he is ignoring her, but now she pulled away. So the same thing that he did earlier, now she's doing.
Yes,
and so, again, we're seeing someone pulling away, and there's no communication on either their part.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't notice.
Well, that's true, but whether he noticed or not, you know, it's still the same thing.
Same thing.
Pulling away, right. Now, granted, when he pulled away, she was hurt by it, and that hurt led to arguments. Like you said, bad communication. Well, you said no communication, but it was no communication on his part as to why I'm pulling away, which then turned into bad communication because they were arguing all the time. And so you're right, because when she pulled away, he didn't notice. Or maybe he did, because from a man's perspective, it's two things kind of happening. One, I don't notice. But two, I do notice. It feels good not to have to argue and fight with her. And so after going through periods of arguing and fighting, it even got physical. And whenever you hit somebody, it hurts people. You know, physical violence always hurt people. And I can assure you, I'm digressing just a little bit, going back to those days when she was pregnant, but I can assure you, if they were arguing and it got physical, there was some verbal abuse going on too, as we saw at the end of the story. So there was probably some verbal abuse, which is also hurtful things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But in his mind, he didn't notice, but he did notice. He noticed he don't have to argue and fight with her anymore. And so for a man, it's best if I just avoid you, because if I have to confront you, then we're going to be arguing and fighting. So he focused on what was good. So for him, it was a different response to her pulling away. Instead of going after her, it was, I'm kind of glad she's out of the way. You know, I'm not going to rock the boat. It's that kind of thing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, she barely talks to me. I'm good. It ain't broke. We still live here, so we're still together.
That,
you know,
well,
and
yeah,
it's crazy,
oh my
right?
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense either, because women, for the most part, now I'm not saying all,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying all,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, women tend to talk.
Right.
That is their thing now, and that in a big, you know, heads up to any man that is out there listening to it. If a woman stops talking to you, you know that you're in trouble.
Well, and see, from a woman's perspective, but for a lot of men, if your woman stopped talking to you, you're like, yes,
yeah, you know. But I'm telling, but that is the reason why. Hey, that is the reason why I'm giving the men the heads up. The moment that she stops nagging you is not a good sign. So just, you know, to go ahead and turn that knob on and like, oh, you know, Reverend Arlene said that if my woman stops talking to me, I'm in trouble. You better go ahead and talk to that woman.
He's going to be like, you crazy. I ain't going to poke the bear. I'm going to leave her right where she is. She ain't messing with me. I ain't messing with her.
I'm telling you, it's not. Believe me, it's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign. None of these things are good signs. And these are ways that we hurt each other, and you're right. They're not good signs. But, you know, if we look at how we typically deal with it, because if we break down, you know, what really goes on, if you've got arguments in a relationship, there's somewhere there's poor communication. Somehow the two of you are not finding a way to really communicate what you're feeling. You know, either one of you or both of you are holding back on the truth. And really, what's a relationship without transparency? If you get to the point where you're verbally abusive, and some people don't even have to get to that point, that's just the way they are. But if you're saying things, you know, if you're calling your woman a bee, or, you know, you're calling your man out of his name, or, you know, if you're saying things to the person to hurt their feelings, you're so stupid, you're ugly, you're fat, you're this, you're that, that's a problem. That's a problem. If you're putting your hands on somebody that you're supposed to love, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're ignoring someone, like you're saying, that's a problem. Because how are we in a relationship if we're not relating? So that's a problem. But Arlene, let me ask you, can you think of anything else besides the things that we mentioned as to how we hurt each other?
Not really. Well, I would say expecting a person, and mind you, this is a further and deeper discussion, but expecting the person to love you the way you want to be loved, and not understanding what each other's love languages are, because you may inadvertently hurt the person that you love because they're not understanding your particular love language, and vice versa. So
okay.
I would say that is one way, another way that people hurt each other, and it's completely unintentional. Especially if a person, say for instance, you know, their love language might be acts of service, and the house is junky all the time, and you know that this is something that they like.
Mm-hmm.
And the person whose love language is acts of service, they're going to appreciate the fact that you give them more time with acts of service. If you're with a person whose love language is touch, and I'm not just talking about sex, I'm just
mm-hmm.
talking about,
mm-hmm.
but that is the way they communicate. It could just be a pat on the shoulder, it could be a hug during the day. Having that for that person not being touched, not having any type of affection from a person, it causes them to be emotionally starved. Same thing can go for any of the other love languages. So like, say, for instance, if a person has the love language of gifts, for a person whose love language is gifts, receiving something just, you know, kind of reiterates that you at some point in your day actually thought about them. And so whenever they see that particular gift, you know, their heart gets filled up with, you know, love and, you know, gladness that, you know, that they have a super awesome spouse that thought about them and purchased something from them.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, if you spend all of your time you know, away, and their love language is quality time,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
they don't get the opportunity to see you, you know, then you have a problem. You would definitely have a problem there, because the opportunity to interact with you, the opportunity to talk with you and engage with you and spend time with you would be a problem with a person who has that as a particular love language. I'm trying to think if I covered them all.
Well, you did, but you really didn't need to, because they're all saying the same thing. The way that
yeah.
you're hurting someone is by not showing them love.
Showing them love, yeah.
Right, which
yeah.
is, you know, which would, but that's cool. I know you just wanted to get into the five love languages. We're not talking about that today, but I know you just wanted to go there. Go
oh,
ahead
yeah.
now. Do your thing, girl. I see you. But yeah, not showing someone love. And we are going to talk about, you know, love and understanding love. But how about, if we look at this story, how about cheating? That's huge.
Yes.
No
yes.
one wants to be cheated on. Of the things that we have mentioned,
mm-hmm.
only putting your hands on someone and physical and verbal abuse, and then depending upon who you are, may be worse than cheating. So those are definitely in the top three. You know, different people may place them in a different order, but cheating, physical and verbal abuse have got to be three of the biggest ways that, you know, we hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a big thing, and there's reasons why all of these things happen. So let's talk about the reasons why we hurt each other. We hurt each other, not others, but, you know, so what are some of the reasons why we would hurt somebody? What's the reason why someone may cheat on someone?
Not feeling well. The reason for cheating would be not feeling emotionally fulfilled by the marriage. You know, the thing is like in the example that you gave, the story, she starts going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, she probably started out just so that she could get his attention. And she, you know, when she's getting down, she's taking off this baby weight and, you know, he's not noticing it.
Right.
And she's probably, you know, and the thing is that when you are, oh, let's put it this way, there's this saying that goes that if you do not take care of your business at home and take care of your love, you know, the person that you love at home, there's somebody else outside that's going to take care of it. So she had a work husband who was fulfilling that particular need, because I'm sure, you know, if that guy comes up and kisses her, he was definitely showing her appreciation in some other form or fashion when she started taking off.
Well, if you look at that whole setting, she probably didn't even tell him she was married, because he came up, threw his arms around her and kissed her. He's thinking something else. You know, this is a Christmas party for the company. So there's something else going on in his mind. And when she says, "This is my husband," he takes a step back and starts stuttering on his words. "Husband, right, you're married, right. I've heard a lot about you. Now you're lying." So she probably forgot to mention one very important part of her life, that there's a man that she's connected to in wedlock.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's,
you know, because when you creeping, you don't work that way. You know, if I'm creeping around with you, don't nobody know what we getting into except for you and I. When we go in, but ain't nobody around. You know, so I'm certainly not going to come up to you at the Christmas party where all my other coworkers are and, you know, put something on you.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the level of boldness that happens when you think we got something here. And when you find out we ain't got what you thought we got, you know, woof.
Man, good thing I just got a crushed hand out of that deal.
Right, exactly. That's what he can walk away with. I'm glad all he did was squeeze my hand. You know, it could have got ugly up in there. But and let's, since we're breaking down that story and we're looking at, you know, ways that, or reasons why we hurt each other from that story, let's actually back up to the first time, because in the very beginning they were madly in love with each other, or so they thought, you know, in their very young minds. But once she said she was pregnant, something happened. What do you think was going on with him?
Well, with him, I think that the whole experience of being a father and just, you know, it being focused on the baby, that's just where his attention went. And as far as she was concerned, I would say, with her being as detached as she was, as you said in the story, the chances are she was suffering from postpartum depression.
Yeah, but you're a little further in the story than what I'm saying. We're coming back to the first time, because remember, in the beginning of the story, they were in love. It started off from less having drinks to, before we know it, we're in a relationship, and we don't even know how we got here, but the relationship is so good, and then her saying she's pregnant. This is where the first time we see a problem, when she said she's pregnant, remember?
And he pulls back.
Right.
Right.
So let's look at this. We're looking at the reasons, you know, why we hurt each other. So he started hurting her by pulling back. Why you think he did that? What was going on with him that would make him pull away from this woman who obviously he's so much in love with? He can't get enough of her. You know, he's loving her up in all kinds of ways, and now, you know, they're producing.
Well, I know that the idea of fatherhood, especially when it's unplanned, will throw anybody for a loop. So he pulled away in order to wrap his mind around around being a father, and he still, and then with him not communicating that he's feeling whatever it is that he's going through,
mm-hmm.
whatever his feelings are, he's not communicating that.
Yeah.
And then continues that behavior of being kind of ambivalent about it even throughout the pregnancy, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, will not make any woman feel good, you know, if you don't feel that, you know, you have full support of the person who you've made this child with,
mm-hmm.
you know, all throughout the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. But I want to come back. I don't want to get to the pregnancy. I want to kind of walk this thing in because a lot happened in this story. And I want to, you know, kind of give people an idea of, you know, reasons why we're doing things. So, and I'm with you with this. When this young man, again, 23, you know, so not a lot of life experience. When he finds out that he's going to be a father, it was probably a big fear factor. And one of the things we didn't hear in this story is about family, parents. So we don't know what kind of relationships they had with their parents. But from, you know, if we look at what happened, here's a guy who is crazy about the girl, or so it sounds, until she says, I'm pregnant. Now, he didn't leave her, but he made himself not as accessible to her as he had been. You know, he's not talking to her on the phone as much. She can't hang out with him as much because he's got all kinds of excuses. When he do hang out, you know, it's almost like it's obligatory. Well, I need to do something because, you know, she my girl, so I got to spend some time with her. But they used to hold hands. Now he don't even want to hold hands with her. He'll hug her, but not the same thing. It's not the same level of affection. So he took his affection away from her. But that's probably fear going on, right?
Right. Right. In addition to that, especially since we don't know what the background is,
mm-hmm.
I would say that, you know, he probably did not have that represented to him when he himself was younger, because that's where we pick up the majority of our patterns from anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from
mm-hmm.
from our own childhood experiences and our life experiences, especially up until that time.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, too. He was probably scared, and there's no one he can go to, and he didn't have a role model. You know, he probably didn't have a man, a dad there, you know. So like you're saying, he don't know because he haven't seen this before. But then we're going, you know, what, at least around the fourth, fifth month, there's problems. So 4 or 5 months into her pregnancy, they can't even communicate anymore. What do you think is going on there that, you know, they start off arguing all the time, and it gets to the point where every time they're in the same room, all they do is argue. They can't find any peace in a relationship. What do you think is going on right there? Because this is hurtful. If you've ever been in a relationship where you can't find peace, you can't get along with the person, no matter what you feel, not to say that what you're doing is right, you know, but no matter what you feel you've done, you just can't seem to get to a common ground where y'all not arguing unless you just don't say anything at all. What do you think is going on, you know, now with both of them? Because it takes two to tangle.
Well, I think that her not actually communicating that, or actually bringing it to his attention that you know, I've noticed that you've pulled away from me. It feels like you're pulling away from me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me what's going on, and not being, again, communication,
mm-hmm.
communication. That's like primary and number one, but understanding each other's point of view and where they're coming from,
mm-hmm.
and being able to share, like, okay, you know, I'm having some fears about this. I'm having some concerns about being a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then her, you know, not saying to him, you know, well, when you're pulling, I understand that you're having fears, but, you know, this whole thing with you pulling away from me, you know, I'm feeling lonely here. I'm feeling like I'm unsupported. I feel like I'm going through this pregnancy by myself.
Yeah. And I agree with you, because here's a situation where they're young, but communication, you need to be transparent in communication. We talk about good relationships. You know, a lot of people think it's important to have secrets in relationships. I think that eventually any secret in a relationship is going to tear your relationship apart. You want to grow together. Now, see, I'm talking about spirituality here. A lot of people are just talking about trying to survive in this three-dimensional world. You know, they're not trying to grow spiritually. They may not even understand that. You know, so I'm about to turn up here. You know, so if you really want to be about life, and life is, you know, can be synonymous with God. So we're not talking about surviving your three-dimensional existence where you just want to exist with someone. We're talking about growing spiritually. There's always room to move to another level. You got to connect on a level deeper than sex. You got to connect on a level deeper than, oh, I love you. You know, you got to connect on a level that is really combining your spiritual energies together. And if I'm holding something from you, I can't do that. You see, biggest lie that people have accepted is that we are separate from God and that we're separate from each other. If I'm separate from you, then it's okay for me to keep a secret from you. If I realize that, you know, etherically speaking, beyond the flesh, my flesh is separate from your flesh, but the truth of who I am is far more than this silly body that I'm in. You know, my spirit is connected to your spirit. So essentially, even though on this level you may not know my secret, somewhere within your conscious mind you can tell your girlfriends, he's keeping something from me. I don't know what it is, but he's keeping something from me. So why even play this game? You and I, we won. If I'm trying to grow spiritually and I want you to grow with me, or I want you to grow, period, whether it's with me or not with me, I got to be transparent. I got to be psychologically naked. I got to be willing to take a chance on getting hurt. Because if I don't, we're not going to have a relationship. And you got to do the same thing. Now, these are young kids, and I'm sure there's no one to guide them to this path. So here it is. He don't even know how, in most cases, I'm pretty sure, he don't even know how to express what's going on in him. He may not even be aware of it. He just might be so scared that he may not be a good father. He don't know how to take care of a kid. You know, he don't know if he make enough money. He's just probably so riddled with fear that he do what men do. When we got a problem, we retreat to our cave. We need time to work it out. You know, and sometimes it takes more than 24 hours. And so with her being there, wanting to push him, it's like, look, I need some time to figure this thing out. And she's not giving him time. So she's all up in his space, and that makes him uncomfortable. And he doesn't know how to say those words, so it comes out nasty. It comes out with verbal attacks. And she's emotional. She's pregnant. So obviously, you know, she's more highly emotional, more hormonal than normal. And so she's sensitive to the fact that he's been pulling away. Every time he says something smart, that hurts her feelings because she's in a very sensitive and delicate position right now. She needs more from him than what he's capable of giving right now. And neither of the two are in a position where they can really express to each other what's going on with their bodies and with their minds. And so the words just aren't coming out, and all they can do is lash out, you know. And so let's move a little further beyond that. Now we're at the part, it's the end of the second trimester. That's still 3 more months to go, but we are at the 6th month, and they're already putting their hands on each other. They are physically hitting each other. Arlene, talk to me about that, baby. That's not right.
No, it's not right. And I know that there, national statistics show that that, you know, 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate. Yes.
Per minute?
Per minute.
We've been on the air for 38 minutes. That's a lot of people who've been physically abused.
Yes. By an intimate partner in the United States. It's 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men who have been victims in some form of physical violence. 1 in 5 women and 1 in 7 men who have been victims of severe physical violence. And then there is one in seven women and one in 18 men that have been stalked by an intimate partner.
Wow.
And on a typical day, there's more than 20,000 phone calls placed to domestic violence hotlines. Now, I also, an interesting thing, you know, for the LGBT community.
Because we don't want to exclude them. They go through it, too.
They go through it, too. And their statistics is sometimes higher than those that in the rest of the population.
Stop playing.
Up to 25 to 32% of the LBG population experiences domestic violence in its lifetime. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, a lot of people, us heterosexuals, would think that if you're with someone of the same sex, it would be easier. You know, men, we like to, you know, get it on. So we're thinking two men, you know, they just want to get it on all the time. Then they sit down, have a beer, watch some football or something like that. You know, you think the issues that we have with communicating and understanding and dealing with women aren't there, so it wouldn't be there. And with women, you would think it's the same thing. You know what? Y'all kind of alike. Y'all like the same things. You would think it would be all nice and, you know, flowers and unicorns and all sweet. And here you're saying statistically they're higher than if you was in a heterosexual relationship. Now, LGBT community, we're not attacking you. We're just throwing out statistics. This is a problem that affects everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what else you got there, Arlene?
Well, they say that approximately 23% of men who have lived with a man as a couple have reported being raped, physically abused, physically assaulted, and stalked by a male cohabitant. Now, apparently, it is slightly less with women. More than 11% of women who have lived with a woman as a part of a couple reported being raped, physically assaulted, or stalked by a female cohabitant. But 21.7% of women who had married and lived with a man as a part of a couple reported such violence by a husband or a male cohabitant. So, you know, those are the stats that I have, at least on physical violence. But, you know, do you want to talk about some of the spiritual reasons why people hurt one another?
You know I do.
I'm just bouncing
around in my chair.
Oh, well, go ahead.
I feel like I'm about to explode.
Okay, well, go ahead and explode all over the people.
Well, for starters, because I'm going to get into, you know, the deeper reasons. We talked about some reasons, but it goes beyond that. And oftentimes in our world, we get home, we watch the 6 o'clock news or 5 o'clock news nowadays, and you know, we hear this stuff on TV, you know, domestic violence or something else that happened in a relationship, and it's easy to point fingers at the person who appears to be the wrong person, the bad person. I remember a couple months back, I think it was earlier this year, some guy came down to Maryland. He had a girlfriend that he was seeing here, or maybe he was already here. He killed his girlfriend, went up to New York, and killed the cop, you know, and so he's the bad guy here. From a spiritual standpoint, we're all doing what we're supposed to do, as crazy as it looks. So I want to throw out this quote from the late, great Dr. Wayne Walter Dyer. All blame is a waste of time. No matter how much fault you find with another, and regardless of how much you blame him or her, it will not change you. And you're the important person here. The only thing blame does is to keep the focus off of you when you are looking for external reasons to explain your unhappiness or frustration. You may succeed in making another feel guilty about something by blaming them, but you won't succeed in changing whatever it is about you that is making you unhappy. Another quote from Wayne Dyer, before I go into, you know, what's really going on that makes people act this way, is that Wayne says, all too often, far too many people look for a reason to be unhappy. Think about that. As you go to work tomorrow, if you see that person in the car that just look like they got road rage, or if you get to work and there's always somebody on your job who's angry, or if you're at home and you've got someone who's always complaining about something or someone, people look for opportunities to be unhappy. How about we look for an opportunity to be happy? In a relationship, if you're focusing more on the good than on the bad, what you focus on is going to get better. You're going to move towards that. So let's look at these situations. Let's use our story. In the story, and I'm, for those who just tuned in, I'm going to give you a quick catch-up on the story. A young man in his early 20s met a woman. They fell in love within a matter of months. She got pregnant. After she told him she was pregnant, he started backing off from her. And by the time she was in her fifth month, they were arguing constantly. That's all they did was argue. By the time she was in the sixth month of that pregnancy, they were physically hitting one another. So after the baby is born, the mother goes through a postpartum depression. And so she kind of checks out. But her and her boyfriend have moved in together now. And he is there for the baby. The baby has become his whole world. All he do is go to work, come home, and play with his baby girl. He feeds her. He changes her. He gives her her bath. It's all about her. But he hasn't focused on his girlfriend at all. So time goes on. She suggests that they get married. He agrees. They get married. And things seem to get better after they're married. She's a little more active in their life. You know, she's more active with her child. Not fully, but more than she had been. And things are, you know, good for him more so. For her, we don't know that it's good. Because what we find out is on the night of her Christmas party, some guy on her job comes up to her, hugs her, and kisses her. Now, because she's there with her husband, she pushed the guy away, and she introduced her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy is the husband is silent until he gets home. And they have a conversation about it. I guess it turns into an argument. But whatever the case, she smacks him. Then she hits him. Then he drags her by her hair, and he hits and smacks her. And he ends up leaving the house. So the whole thing here is, how do we get to the point where we hurt those that we love? So let's use this as our test subject here. We're going to start off with her. We don't have a whole lot of background on either of these, but we're just going to kind of break down what's going on. In the very beginning, she's pregnant. She's got to be scared as well. You know, again, we don't know anything about a family life, but nowhere has it been mentioned that there's the support of family. So without the support of family, it's scary to be here. But the fact that she is in a position where she has attracted physical violence, there's probably something going on in her. It's probably something that she witnessed somewhere in her lifetime, physical violence, because she attracted a man who is willing to put his hand on her. And she put her hand on him. You know, in the end, now, when they started beating each other up when she was pregnant, we don't know who hit who first. But in the end, she smacked him first and punched him before he retaliated. So somewhere in her, for her to have this kind of aggression, she grew up with it. She's seen this kind of aggression. Even if it wasn't firsthand, it became something in her consciousness that she believes she's supposed to do in certain situations. And so as it became a part of her mindset that she's supposed to do it, it came out when the appropriate time presented itself, i.e. when he called her the B word, you know, after finding out she was cheating. That deserves a smack. Okay. So when she had this baby, she had postpartum. She went through a depression. That happens to a good number of women when that happened. What she needed was support. She needed comfort, particularly from the man she loves. And instead, he wasn't there for her. So for her, there's a feeling of isolation. There's a feeling of being rejected. There's a feeling of being completely alone. And now there's a void that needs to be filled. And if we really break it down and get to the bottom, she's not feeling loved. She needs to be loved. even if we look at what's going on, in the argument, she compared herself to her daughter. All you do is pay attention to her. You put her before me. So it's, and it may not even be a matter of jealousy, but it's a matter of you love her. Where's my love? And so the woman wants to be loved. Now, again, if we look at this and we look at traditional reasons for this in women, we can go back to the home again. There was not the kind of love from a father figure that she needed. And even if there was, it wasn't what was sufficient for her. Because, interestingly enough, sometimes from the outlook, meaning people looking around could say, you know, your father did everything for you. He loved you. He spoiled you. He talked to you. He spent time with you. He went to all of your basketball games. But that doesn't mean in her mind she saw it that way. So that's why I say what I say. For her, she didn't get the love the way she wanted or needed it. So he either wasn't there to give it, or if he was there, and even if he gave it, it wasn't the way she needed it. And that goes to what you had said before, earlier, about love languages. You know, sometimes we can do all we can to show someone we love them, but if they don't receive it, because we're not saying it in their love language. You know, if I'm speaking Korean to you, and you clearly speak Russian, then we got a problem going on. I'm saying in Korean, I love you, girl, and you saying in Russian, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm getting louder and louder, and now you're getting angrier and angrier. And all I'm trying to tell you is I love you. So here's what goes on, what's going on. You know, our actions doesn't always, even when our actions are from a point of love, a position of love, doesn't always translate to love if it's not the way the person we're trying to present it to understand love. And I just want to say this real quick. It's another quote from Dr. Wayne Dyer before I go on with this. You are always a valuable, worthwhile human being, and not because anybody says so, not because you're successful, not because you make a lot of money, but because you decide to believe it and no other reason, for no other reason. You know, we have to believe in ourselves. Arlene, you and I, we talk a lot about self-love in our workshops and in the things that we do. Self-love, when you look at this woman's situation, there was a lack of a strong self-love. There was a lack of a sheer positive self-love. And so she was vulnerable. And the man that she got married to allowed her to be vulnerable. Like you had mentioned, she probably started working out. When she worked out that baby weight that she had, that was most likely for him. You know, she wanted back what they had in the beginning. So she went to the gym, and she put in time in to get slim and trim and look all sexy, and all he notices is, you know, his little girl crawling across the floor. You know, he ain't paying attention to her. Oh, they talking now, but he's not looking at her the same way. And she's longing for that. She needs the attention. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but that stems from not having sufficient self-love. Because when you love yourself, another Wayne Dyer quote, when you are with the one you love, you're never lonely. And what that means is if you love yourself, sincerely love yourself, you're never sitting around being lonely because you love your own company. You love you, and you don't need outside. The proof of that is, you know, there are thousands of monks and monasteries, particularly in China, who do just that. They don't need anyone else. They're perfectly content with themselves. But that's also a high level of spirituality. And as I mentioned, we going in on spirituality. We talking about it. So to have the ideal relationship, you got to come from a spiritual standpoint. So now here's this woman who's vulnerable. And at work, you know, here's the thing about predators. And a lot of us men, we have a predatory instinct. You see a woman and you could tell something wrong, you know. Why? Because she's carrying around that energy. She has that vibration that she's not happy. So here's this dude at work, and he decides he's going to prey on it. You know, maybe in his mind, she's perfect girl for him. Who knows what's going on with him? He's a small part of the story. But whatever the case, he got her to like him enough that they started having an affair. And from the story, we have to believe he didn't even know he was caught up in an affair with a married woman. You know, again, when you walk up to a woman at your Christmas party and you hug and kiss her out in the open, your mind is, this is my girl. So she probably never even mentioned that. She just got him on the hook, and he thinking everything is okay. When she pushes him away and say, this is my husband, first thing out of his mouth is, yeah, your husband. Right, right, you're married. You know, so now you can tell he's trying to play this off. He just caught up in something he didn't even need to be in. You know, but for her, what's going on is she's lonely. It ain't about this guy here. He's the substitute guy. You know, she wanted her husband who's not paying her any attention. She need to feel valuable. She need to feel love. She need to feel loved. And she wasn't getting that at home. And from a spiritual standpoint, she didn't have enough love for herself within her to save her, to keep her from going down this path. And so now this shiny dude, looking and smelling all good, saying all the right stuff, putting a smile on her face day in and day out, you know. And keep in mind, she was working late, once or twice a week. That was when they was having their time together. You know, that was date night. When she was allegedly working late once or twice a week, she just needed to feel love. And that's what she's asking for. And her man's not hearing it. So if we look at what's going on with him, in the very beginning, he has some fears. Fears probably about how I'm going to take care of this child. I don't know what I'm going to do. He needed some time to work things out in his mind. Probably did not have support of a strong family. Probably did not have a strong male image in his life that he could look to or even go to, you know, and confide in. And so not being able to communicate what was going on with him, they had a lot of arguments because he couldn't tell her he was scared. He couldn't tell her he's worried about how he's going to take care of a baby, how he's going to be a father. The one good thing he did was he didn't break up with her. He didn't leave her. He just pulled back. At the same time, he was a young man, so he didn't understand that in him pulling back, that's making her more afraid. She's carrying his child, and in her mind, she needs, like I said, love, but she needs to know that he's there with her. And he wasn't showing that, you know. And if there was patterns in her past of people not being there, mom, dad, you know, not being there for her, this can make it even more scary, which can cause arguments. Why? Because even though it's him and it's not her parents, what's really going on deep in the subconscious mind is I'm being rejected again, like mom rejected me, like dad rejected me. So the same stimuli is now rushing through all of your sensors, and it's making you afraid. And in making you afraid, you're lashing out. Now, he's also afraid, and what he's trying to do is hide. He's trying to back into a cave so that he have time to figure out what he's going to do. And for him, it may be, oh, my God, I don't know how to do it. What's going on in his mind is, I've never been taught this. I've never seen this. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to talk to. I'm all alone in the world. Even though this woman has his child in her, in his mind, I'm all alone in the world. How am I going to take care of this? It's not how are we going to take care of this. It's how am I going to take care of this. And so he's looking for just some time, just some space. And when they get together, what's happening is all of their inner child issues, all of their fears, all of this abandonment issue, this rejection issue, and mostly this I'm not good enough, I can't do this issues are coming out. And they're not coming out in a healthy way, you know, because they're not psychologically naked with each other. Instead, they're defensive and they're combative in their speech. And so if we get into, you know, the marriage, the husband is looking for the path of least resistance. I don't want to fight with her. So now that we don't have to fight, you know, we don't have to fight. But instead, he should have not necessarily been looking for a fight, but trying to find out what's going on with his wife. Show that you care. You know, be there for her. But that wasn't his game plan, because his game plan was, I'm tired of the arguing. I'm tired of the violence. physical violence, mind you. I'm tired of that. And so if I can still live here with her, then she must know that I love her because I'm here. That's the proof that I love her. That's a man's mind, you know, in general. It's not specific, but in general, that's a man's mind, and more specific to this guy. I'm still here, so I must love you. We live together. I married you, but you're not showing it. You're not putting forth the effort. Yes, you're taking care of our child, but what about me? You know? So we got a lot of things going on here, and it's stemming around a lot of fears, and it's fears that need to come out, but a lot of the fears is, you know, for him, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. And so he's hiding. He's not being the man he can be. He's hiding. He's taking the path of least resistance. Now, I'm just going to get a little personal here. My grandfather told me when I was a young man that when you become a man, it's all about taking responsibility. You can't take the path of least resistance. You have to be responsible even when those who are around you can't be responsible. From a limited perspective on our man in this story, he might have felt like he was being responsible. He's taking care of his child. But when you get married, you're also responsible to your spouse. Even if you're just in a relationship, you're responsible to your partner. He wasn't taking responsibility. And by him not taking responsibility, she found comfort in the arms of another man. And in the end, they both resorted back to their primal stage. He held it in until he got home. When he got home, he calmly questioned her, "What's going on with this dude? Are you cheating on me?" As she started talking, now granted, she was explaining herself and probably kind of going off a little bit because she was talking about, when I was depressed, you weren't there for me. You know, all you care about is your daughter. What about me? He wasn't hearing any of that. He probably heard the tone of her voice because he didn't even let her finish. He didn't even try to communicate with her. Again, the path of least resistance. It's harder to say, honey, calm down and let's try to talk about it. Or forget calm down, because that usually makes them get more upset. But to listen to her and say, okay, let's go through this again and let's look at what we both can do to keep this relationship together. You know, several ways he could have approached it, but he didn't do any of those. Instead, he called her a cheating bee. And so she responded with violence. Why? Because it's what she knows. This isn't the first time in their relationship there's violence. So, again, this is a part of who she is. This is something that she's seen in her younger years, even if it wasn't her mom or dad. You know, this is something that somewhere in her life she picked up. It's okay to do it. And so she's operating off of the aegis that if you treat me a certain way, I can lash out violently. And that's caveman-esque. You know, hopefully in a relationship, we want to move beyond that kind of stuff. And so he, not being much better, of course, he took two hits. The first one was just a spat. Then they just eyeing each other down. Her, knowing, because they've been violent with each other before, figuring, he going to hit me. She punched him in the mouth, getting it off before he could get it in. And then he ended up hitting her anyway before he left. So this is a couple that really needs some help, but they've got to come to terms with what's going on with them. She is, you know, there's self-love issues on hers, but there's self-worth issue on him. And whenever you have two people come together like that, needing self-love, you're looking for the other person to love you the way you don't feel you can love yourself, and self-worth issues, you're looking for somebody else to validate you when all you really need to do is look within. And so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to these lines because we've got some people out here who want to talk to us. Arlene, are you ready to talk to some people?
Yes, I'm ready to talk to some people.
All right, well, here we go. Oh, 1 minute.
You want me to do it?
If you can, because my, you know, it just froze up on me.
I clicked new. Hey.
Did yours freeze up on you as well?
No, I don't think it's freezed up on me, but it's spinning around in a circle.
Well, show me. Hello, caller, you're on the line. Hello? Hello?
I don't think that they're there yet.
Okay, well, let's try the other one. All right, so the internet is being funny with us today, huh?
Yeah, okay. It's not unusual with us, ladies and gentlemen, but we'll be with you in just a moment.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. Let me get this together and get the internet to go ahead and open up this line so that we can talk. Caller, you're on the line. Hello?
Hello, last digits 4703. You're on the air.
Okay. Well, Arlene, since we're having problems there, let us just go ahead and take this moment to do something different. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Join us here on the Family Healing Circle, where we heal your mind, body, and soul. Every Sunday, we start your week off right with the delightful Daletta Gillespie and Updraft. It is always an educational and informational show. Tune in on Mondays for Totally Whole with Pastor Bridget and Pastor Cook as they give you the word. Tune in on Tuesday with world-famous DJ Davey D as he plays all of your old-school favorites in R&B, hip-hop, jazz, house, and rap. Join us every Thursday where there's something different. The first Thursday of the month, ladies, is for you. Total Empowerment with the owner of Simple Wellness Hair and Day Spa, Angela Hardy. On the second Thursday of the month, join relationship coaches, Reverend Arlene Cahet and Reverend Harvey L. Bailey on One Love, One Connection, One Us, as they answer all of your relationship questions. On the third Thursday of the month, men, it's time to man up with our own Sacred Masculine, Reverend Jamel Gilliam and the Sacred Masculine Show. On the fourth Thursday of the month, join me, Reverend Harvey L. Bailey, in the Inner Consciousness as I talk about self-help. When we have a fifth Thursday of the month, you can join Reverend Arlene Cahet with the Healing Paradigms right here on the Family Healing Circle, where we heal your mind, body, and soul every week.
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
All right. Do we have a caller on the line with us?
Well, let's try it one more time. Last four digits, 4703, we're coming to you. Hold on. Hello, you're on the air with One Love, One Connection. Oh, wait,
I don't have anybody. Yeah, there's nobody
there.
Yeah,
we just... Yeah, then we just lost them.
Okay. Well, let us move on. I want to do another quote from Wayne Dyer. Simply put, you believe that things or people make you unhappy, but this is not accurate. You make yourself unhappy. So, Arlene, let's get into how to deal with hurting others. So let's talk about that. How can we deal with it? If we're the ones, let's start off by talking about if we are the ones who are hurting other people. How do we deal with that?
how do we stop hurting other people?
Well, I would say the first way of dealing with it is actually recognizing that you actually recognizing that, you know, that there is the potential, or that we have actually done it, and actually acknowledging it, and not necessarily getting caught up in defensive when we know, when we may have asked somebody, or we find that another person is being defensive about the way we have been behaving towards them. And also, you know, and mind you, I think it definitely takes a great deal of growth and, you know, self-realization to come to that conclusion that, well, maybe the way, especially if we find ourselves in those patterns where people keep saying the same things to us over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and the person happens to be a different person, just knowing that there is a problem there, and actually acknowledging, okay, maybe I need to change up the way that I'm doing things. I think one of the models that we have that works really effectively is nonviolent communication, and where we acknowledge that there has, you know, that there has been an issue that we've raised in another person, and also knowing that you've observed that whenever you do a certain act, that it's bringing up this issue within a person, and then say, you know, and asking them, well, how does that make you, you know, how does that make you feel? Because I've noticed this particular pattern with you whenever I've done whatever it is that, you know, that pushed that person's button. And, you know, and ask, you know, finding out what button you pushed in them from that, and chances are it's going to be from a issue that they've had in their past at some point that it's reminding them and causing them to have anxiety. And in effect, the nonviolent communication is giving you the opportunity to be that perfect mirror for that individual, and then see if you know they have a request of you of how to not necessarily push that button, but actually going ahead and continuing to do the model for each other and being the perfect mirror, and also taking a look at yourself and looking at your own patterns and looking for a way to heal one another, because one of the other things that people should know about relationships is that those relationships, those people that you tend to be attracted to, and this doesn't just go for intimate relationships, but it goes for almost all of them, that the people who you draw into your life are being the perfect mirror to you. They are, if there is something in you that you find yourself getting stirred up whenever they've done something, that may be idiosyncratic, that you need to take a look at yourself and ask yourself, well, why does this, you know, why do I feel this way when this particular experience comes up, you know, and what is it reminding me of? And then asking yourself, how can you go about healing it as well? But Reverend Harvey, do you have any suggestions for the audience as to, you know.
You really did a pretty good job. I'm just going to recap, you know, what you said and maybe throw one or two things in there, but I am in total agreement with that. You know, if I am the person who is doing most of the hurting, because everybody hurts everybody. It's just who we are, and we hurt people basically because people are judgmental regardless. We have in our minds an idea of what is supposed to happen. And anytime something other than that idea happens, if it's better than that idea, then we're happy. It's great. You know, it's better than we could have imagined. But if it's less than that idea, if it doesn't live up to it, then we're hurt. And so everybody has their own ideas. We all come into relationships with different ideas of what a relationship is. So one of the things you should do before you get serious in a relationship is find out from your partner, what do you believe a relationship is supposed to be? And don't take the surface answers. Oh, well, you know, two people, they love each other, they spend time together, they do things. Yeah, okay. That's cousins. let's get deeper. And if you find that they can't get deeper, then share what you have. And if you're the one who can't get deeper, then you need to dig into it. Because really, if that's what you think a relationship is, when you don't have that, and that's a broad category, then you're not going to be happy with the relationship. You open yourself up to the old, oh, well, I don't love that person anymore. Arlene, what is love? You know, you have a definition for love?
Well, you know, I did actually take a look at the definition of love, mm-hmm. and as defined by Webster, is mm-hmm. an intense feeling of deep affection. A person or thing that one loves. And then there is the verb definition, which is to feel a deep romantic or sexual attachment to someone. Now, I will admit that when I saw that definition, I was thinking that it was really, really thin mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. on the explanation
right.
of what love is.
Mm-hmm.
But
and you're right.
But what would you say the definition of love is?
Well, and again, I'm going to say this. You know, no one can tell you what love is for you. And so you need to figure out what love is for yourself. But you should also make sure that the person who you're getting involved in has an idea of love that matches your idea of love. Because if I think love is one thing and you think love is something else, then what I'm trying to get and what you're trying to get is not the same thing. What love is for me is love is never ending. It just is. It is the feeling of oneness with the Almighty. It is knowing that you are connected to the Most High. It is knowing that there is nothing anyone anywhere can do to take away your happiness, because my happiness isn't depending. You know, it doesn't, it's not connected to you. You can't make me happy, nor can you make me sad. You know, I have peace with myself, and I have a love and an understanding of myself that I want to share with another. You know, so in a relationship, I want to share all the goodness that I have. When a person is so filled